Well, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News, second attempt for Friday, February 2nd, 2024. Mike Adams here. Yeah, I'm sorry to say that I just recorded about 45 minutes and it's gone. File corruption on the SD card. I don't know. I use the Rodecaster Pro 2 and it's been perfect up until today. I don't know what happened. I really don't know, but that's too bad because it was a really great podcast. I'm going to have to make it very short now just in order to wrap this up. But we had some good videos to play for you. I'm going to go ahead and play those videos anyway. We have a video from James O'Keefe, another video from a spicy woman in New York City complaining about the invasion of the migrants there and the gangs that are forming up around that. And then we've got some news about in Brussels, they're firing rubber bullets at farmers who are protesting, you know, the green policies of shutting down farms. A German fact checker that's funded in part by the Soros Foundation calls the farmers conspiracy theorists for thinking that anybody's trying to shut down their farms when the governments are trying to shut down their farms. I had covered news about the FDA declaring the end of informed consent. They're about to publish information in the Federal Register that allows them to no longer need informed consent. They can just experiment on you whenever they want. It's all part of the, you know, replacement through depopulation. And then I was talking about CDC numbers that show that replacement theory is quite real. And then finally, I went through some news about how the IL-76 cargo plane that was shot down over Ukraine, which was carrying 65 Ukrainian service members who were POWs. Well, it turns out that Russia investigated it, found out that it was actually shot down by US Patriot missile system firing US weapons. So US weapons brought down and killed 65 Ukrainian service members that were in a Russian cargo plane, the IL-76. And according to Joe Biden, America has the right to bomb Iran because Iran supplied weapons to some militia groups that fired those weapons and killed some American soldiers. So according to the same logic now, Russia, I suppose, using Joe Biden's logic, could justify bombing America because America provided bombs or missiles to Ukraine that have brought down this plane and killed all these Russians and Ukrainians. So do we apply the same logic here? But I tell you what, let's play a video here first. This woman in New York City who is not at all happy about the invasion of illegals. And she's got some spicy things to say about it. So we're going to censor some of her F-bombs, but it's a really great video to watch. Check it out.
Guys, the violence here in the last 2 weeks in New York City has gotten so bad. Basically, all the migrants have all created like these little sub-gangs according to where they have derived from. The Colombians are sticking together. The Venezuelans are sticking together. And the assault and the murder rate has just gone through the roof. I saw my friend this weekend who's NYPD, and he was telling me how crazy it is and that they have direct orders that they can't even really arrest them unless it's a serious, serious crime. Isn't that f-ing sick? You're NYPD and your boss is telling you, listen, don't make us look bad. Don't arrest any of them. I mean, isn't that f-ing sick? Meanwhile, you got citizens who live here and they jaywalk and the cops are like, take that piece of shit and let's go. $3,000 fine. I mean, it's wild. So basically, in the tents right now, there's one specific story that stands out a little bit. Last week, this man from Venezuela was waiting on the food line to get their food, and he tried to, like, you know, hook up with some girl who belonged to a Peruvian guy. The Peruvian guy got mad that, you know, he was trying to mack it to his girl, and then he stabbed him in the f-ing neck. That was it. He's dead. Goodbye. And that's just like, you know, the tip of the iceberg. What do you think? It's not going to continue? It's going to get worse. Jeez, I mean, the stories he told me, you guys would die.
Now I want to play the James O'Keefe video. James O'Keefe, he went in disguise by dyeing his hair a little bit orange and putting on glasses. Apparently, this was a total disguise. And he met up with this ultra gay guy who is, a Biden administration top cybersecurity person, manager. So I don't know. You can watch the video and see for yourself. He's involved in cybersecurity with the White House. And the guy just spills his guts about Michelle Obama and Biden's cognitive impairment, all kinds of things. And the craziest part is he doesn't recognize James O'Keefe. And it made me realize, like when I was a kid, I watched the Superman movie. I always thought it was so silly that Superman would put on glasses and suddenly he's Clark Kent and nobody knew that that's Superman. Like, that's impossible. That's stupid. Everybody would know that's Superman. Well, James O'Keefe just proved it actually works. You don a pair of glasses and suddenly you're in disguise and nobody knows who you are. Amazing. But check out that video right here.
So you're pretty high up in the government.
Yeah, I'm fairly high up. I'm good at keeping secrets, and so I manage two federal agencies, the State Department and USAID.
So when you say it's like security, like you're protecting
the networks of the federal agencies that you give all your information to.
The mission is to protect information.
And we are like the president's voice when we go into meetings in terms of discussing and promoting the president's priorities.
Is he going to be the nominee?
Yes. And she will be the vice president nominee.
Yeah, I don't.
There was a debate about removing her from the ticket, but sadly they didn't.
She can't keep black staff. They quit on her en masse.
But with him, I know. He's got dementia.
He's definitely slowing down.
Well, they know that he has those issues.
I think so.
But they're not willing to say it.
Shows it. And
they're not willing to say it publicly.
And same thing with Kamala Harris. She's not popular, but you can't remove the first black lady to be vice president from the goddamn presidential ticket. Like, what kind of message are you going to send to, like, an African-American voter? How would you spin that? People would be like, what the fuck? Like, she's a woman and she's multiracial. I think that they're really concerned about this.
But they won't say it. Well, I guess if they say it publicly,
correct.
Biden
can't say it publicly.
Is they can't say it publicly.
No, they've got to toe the line.
Do they say it privately? But they won't say it publicly.
Correct.
That Biden
can't say it publicly.
Is they can't say it publicly.
No, they've got to toe the line.
Do they say it privately? I mean,
I'm just telling you what I've heard. Like,
you're just telling me the truth.
Does it make sense? No, but that's what I've heard. I've had a meeting with Michelle Obama at one point when I was an intern, and someone asked her, "Will you ever run for office?" And she said, "No, emphatically."
Really?
I've seen all the shit my husband has had to go through, and that does not interest me. People would be like, "Well, I don't think we should have to get the vaccine." And I'm like, "Like, you're not going to get the vaccine, and then you're going to go expose my family
exactly.
in the hospital
exactly.
for unlike vaccinated COVID. Like,
so you work in cybersecurity for the White House, and my question is, what are you doing on a meeting with James O'Keefe? What type of cybersecurity operation are you guys running over there?
We're running a good cybersecurity operation.
Well, obviously not.
And then we've got an interview coming up with Timothy Alberino, who is an adventurer, and he's a filmmaker and author, analyst, and so on. And he took a trip deep in the Amazon jungle, I believe it was, to investigate an unsolved mystery of the so-called face peelers, which I have dubbed the face snatchers, according to the legend. And by the way, I'm doing this interview because it's Friday, and we all need a break from so much war news about the Middle East and Russia, Ukraine. And let's go into the Twilight Zone a little bit and hear something different. So Timothy Alberino has a story about the face snatchers that, according to the local villagers, are human. Well, they think they're humans that are dressed up in this exotic black technology outfit that's bulletproof, and they float in out of the jungle on hoverboards that hover above the ground silently. And then they steal people's faces with, they surgically remove, I don't know, with lasers or something. They take their faces and then they leave them for dead, faceless. This is the legend. Okay. So apparently there are a lot of eyewitnesses who talk about this, the face peelers. And this is what Timothy Alberino has to share with us. But first, we're going to go to the special report I recorded earlier that's entitled Globalist Wage War on Food, Farms, and People Under the Guise of Climate Bullcrap. That's a very useful report. So we'll go to that But I did want to remind you that healthrangerstore.com, of course, we have storable food, ranger buckets, lab-tested, certified organic, storable food supplies, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables as well. And don't forget that we have the Dawson knives, the Magna Cut, which is corrosion, almost corrosion proof, but not quite. We call it corrosion resistant. And those knives are good for a lifetime. You buy them once, they're good for life. Extremely rugged, G10 handles, very functional. And we have the Escape from LA knives there, which I think is especially appropriate given that the woman you just heard from is basically talking about Escape from New York, which was, of course, the first movie with Kurt Russell or Snake Plissken trying to escape from New York. No longer fiction, you know? Now it's actually a thing. All right, enjoy this special report. And then on the other side, the interview with Timothy Albarino. I apologize that this had to be short, but again, I lost the previous recording. Well, it got corrupted on the card. Also, one more thing. I tried to erect the flag, the big Texas flag, off the highway for the convoy that's coming. The convoy route passes right by it. That's the fulfillment center for Health Ranger Store. And it failed because the power lines are way too low. The power lines are really close to the fence, it turns out, because it's kind of up on a little bit of a hill. And I had this flag is huge. I had this like 12-foot long Texas flag. And when I put it on the pole and extended the pole and put it out there, I realized that this is a total hazard that could get tangled up in the power lines. Yeah, not cool. And so I made an executive decision to yank the flag. I did not want to risk being responsible for initiating, you know, brush fires or something, or taking down electrical lines, because the wind whips up and then the wind blows the flag and wraps it around the power lines, and then the flagpole gets twisted around and who knows what happens. But it didn't look good to me. I assessed the situation and I said, no, let's not do that. So I apologize. That's why you don't see a flag at the moment there. We're going to have to like build a giant billboard or something to be able to show a flag to the highway traffic there. I don't even know what we're going to do. These power lines are right in the way. It's bad, but whatever. And then I stepped on a bunch of cactus trying to get to that location. So I've been pulling like prickly pear spines out of my feet ever since. That has not been fun. It was a failed mission. It did not go well. So my apologies. All right. That's what I needed to say. Enjoy the special report and the interview, and I'll have more reports for you this weekend. God bless you all. Take care. You know, when the globalists start saying that farming is bad for the planet, that farming is destroying the ecosystem, well, that's when you know you've reached the end game, final stage of globalist depopulation and extermination of humanity. And you've probably noticed that farmers are rising up in protest in Germany and France and the Netherlands, and we're seeing food industry sabotage in the United States. For example, a giant chicken farm just caught on fire and burned up in Texas recently. And of course, over the last 2+ years, we've had maybe 200 different food infrastructure facilities catch on fire or burn down or close down from damage. I mean, it's so obvious what's going on, that it's a global war on food. Now, given that human beings need to eat food, unless you're some kind of, I don't know, new age yogi who can live off of sunlight or something, the rest of us need to eat food. And if you have no food, you have no people, and that's the plan. See, no farms, no food, no humans. It's the war on carbon, because food is made of carbon and human beings are made of carbon. So the war on farms is a war on humans, a war on carbon, and this is where we are. Now, the weaponization of the food supply and also food inflation is designed to make large masses of people more easily controllable. Whereas it's difficult to control people's speech because people want to speak out, obviously, it's very easy to control people when they're starving and desperate and willing to do anything that they're ordered to do in order to get another meal. So that's where this is coming from. Weaponizing food to turn the once free masses into obedient masses. Because for most people, when they're starving, there's nothing they won't do in order to get another meal, including giving up their rights and freedoms. So you know how this is going to go. It will be an assault on farms and food infrastructure, food supply lines. And then they'll say, well, don't worry, FEMA will have, you know, camps for you. I mean, it's like a camping experience. And of course, in order to get the food from FEMA, you have to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated, not just a little bit vaccinated, fully vaccinated with whatever they're coming up with next, whatever new boosters and new shots and new diseases, and new bioweapons. You got to have them all. And if you don't have them, hey, guess what? They'll be happy to give them to you right there at the FEMA camp. They'll have like a vaccine center ready to go. And then if there's civil unrest or we're in World War III, there will likely be another requirement, which is you have to give up your gun. You actually have to bring a gun, turn in a gun to get a meal. And so a lot of desperate people will just start turning in guns. Some people turn them in for $50 in these city gun buyback programs. They'll take an old revolver that might be worth $5,000. They'll sell it to the city for $50. And then, of course, what happens is one of the police officers in the city armory is like, this thing's worth a fortune, and they take it, you know? And then they sell it on the black market sometimes. That happens all the time. So the gun buyback programs are a joke. It's just a way to disarm honest citizens, sadly. And then, of course, the food that you're getting in these FEMA camps or food banks that are sponsored by the government, it's the worst possible food you can imagine. Of course, it's not organic. It's laced with GMOs and glyphosate herbicide, no doubt, all kinds of pesticides, and maybe plasticizer chemicals and things like that. It's heavily processed and nutrient depleted, designed to keep you in a state of nutrient starvation, even though your belly might be full with just carbohydrates and partially hydrogenated soybean oil or whatever garbage they're feeding you today. And yeah, it's going to be seed oils. It's going to be textured vegetable protein. It's going to be sugar, salt, and MSG. And that's what they're going to feed you. And that's designed to keep you dumbed down and docile, because a real warrior, or a real American, a real independent person, is powered in part by real nutrition. I mean, that's one of the reasons that people like me and you are so effective, is because we have good nutrition. It powers our brains, powers our hearts, gives us courage. Really, the food you eat has a huge impact on how strong of a person that you can be throughout every activity in your life, not just sports, but also in terms of, you know, pursuing projects, getting things done, standing up for what's right, things like that. So they're going to be giving people the kind of food that is not just prison food, but food to keep people imprisoned in an authoritarian society. Again, food just to keep you barely alive, but not enough nutrition to think for yourself or get anything done that really matters. So, of course, growing your own food is an incredible act of resistance. Practicing good nutrition is an act of resistance. And one day they'll probably try to outlaw all that. They'll outlaw home gardening and non-GMO seeds. There have been efforts to try to do that already in certain areas, certain cities and towns and neighborhoods with the HOAs and so on. It's already illegal to grow food, typically in your front yard and sometimes in your backyard as well. You have to get permission to have a garden, and it has to look a certain way, and you're limited on which plants you can grow, and you can't put an orchard in there. I mean, it's crazy, but that's only going to get worse. So the key solution in this is, of course, number one, make sure you own your own land free and clear, land where you can grow something. And maybe you want to augment that with a little greenhouse or something, or maybe you're in an area that's great for growing food, but you're going to need water, some rainwater and some other water, most likely. And of course, you're going to need non-GMO seeds so you can save seeds generation after generation. That's critical. And you want to have the skills and the equipment in order to be able to grow food in a way that is sustainable and reproducible and generates more calories than what you put into the food, obviously. So don't forget the high-end steel shovels, not the garbage that they sell at Walmart or Home Depot or whatever. You got to get some good quality shovels that will last a lifetime or maybe close to that. And don't forget your seeds. Of course, we sell those at healthrangerstore.com. We have ARK seed kits available there now. That's ARK. Just go to healthrangerstore.com, search for seed kits. Make sure you've got your seed supply. And even if you never plant the seeds, it's like money in the bank because seeds are great barter items. Now, especially in a collapse, who doesn't want seeds to grow food? And then make sure you've got compost going. It's always good to make good soil and have good microbiology. Soil is the key. I call that black gold, you know, compost. Make sure you've got good minerals to put into your compost and make sure you have good sources of water. Now then, what about the knowledge? What do you do in a collapse? How do you learn things, or what do you do for resources for learning how to grow food or how to deal with pests or how to deal with drought or what have you? Well, this is where our language model comes in. You know, we are putting out free of charge, end of March, a large language model. It's an AI project, Artificial Intelligence, LLM, that is specifically trained on herbs and food, food nutrition, natural medicine, off-grid medicine, permaculture, organic food production, food preservation, food extraction techniques or medicinal extraction. We are training this model on, I'm certain, the largest collection of content on these subjects that has ever been assembled. I don't think anybody is close to what we're doing on this. And so our model will be extremely knowledgeable. And we're currently calling it Neo, by the way. And you can see a demonstration of Neo right now on naturalnews.com. I'm having it write some summaries of my podcast. So it's Neo is listening to my podcast and is writing a story based on the podcast. And just go to naturalnews.com. You can see an example of that. But you can also ask Neo to teach you things. You could ask Neo. And again, you'll be able to run this on your own local computer. Download it for free. Run it on your Mac. Run it on your Windows system. Run it on your Linux system. You'll be able to ask it questions like, not just what do I need to get started with gardening, but really specific questions. For example, create a 10-step bullet point program for the proper way to plant and grow and harvest potatoes in a way that maximizes crop yield. And it will do that. It will write it for you. It will give you, it'll write a whole series of steps. It can write courses, it can create outlines, it can do summaries, it can be a mentor, a teacher. And you can even ask it questions like, hey, what nutrients are in rosemary herbs and what's the best extraction technique to get the nutrients out of rosemary, for example? And it will give you answers, mostly good answers. And you'll be able to use this offline. This is one of the keys, is you don't need an internet connection to use this tool. Sure, you need a connection to download it, but after that, you can run it locally. So if the internet goes down, if we're in a war or we're in a collapse, and you have no connection to the net, you can use this tool as your mentor. Consider it kind of like your prepping mentor. You could ask it anything, like, what's the best way to build a shelter out of a tarp? Or how do I sharpen knives if I don't have a knife sharpener? You know, things like that. Or what's the best way to stitch up like a cut or a hole in a piece of clothing? Or how do I repair shoes? I mean, all kinds of prepping things. How do I create biodiesel, you know? You'll be able to ask all these questions. It'll give you answers. Again, mostly good answers, not 100%, but pretty good answers. And you'll even be able to ask it, like, how do I disassemble a Glock? Give me the answer in 10 steps. And it will walk you through how to disassemble a Glock. And now the first version of this model that we release at the end of March is just version 1, and it will be improved over time. We've already collected so much material that it's going to take us all of 2024 to do all the model training that we want to do. Even though we've invested
a lot of money in hardware systems and, you know, GPUs and so on in order to do the training of these models, it's still going to take, I mean, all year. Well, in other words, we'll have better models every month. I think we'll release one every month. So there'll be version one of Neo and then version, you know, 1.1 and 1.2 and so on. And with each version, it will expand its knowledge base considerably. So if you want to know how you're going to survive the induced famine and the globalist depopulation mass starvation plan that's being engineered, this is part of the answer. I mean, yes, you need seeds. Yes, you need soil. Yes, you need garden tools. You need some know-how, but you need a mentor. You need something that's better than a book. You need something that's like a collection of 1,000 books, something where you can ask any question you want. That's what this is, because it's trained on thousands of books, by the way. Books on agriculture, permaculture, organics, everything that you need for this topic area. And it'll also know a lot of things about emergency medicine, too. So we'll keep expanding the areas of knowledge, more prepping, more survival, more food production, more off-grid living, solar generation, things like that, water capture, rainwater, emergency first aid, emergency sanitizing solutions, and all kinds of things like that. How do I make soap? You know, what do I do with wood ash? Well, guess what? It'll be able to answer those questions. So get ready for that. And the way you can stay informed about this is just get on the naturalnews.com email list and you can sign up. It's free. Just go to naturalnews.com, click on the email list, top right, enter your email address, sign up, and we will keep you posted. And of course, you can just keep listening to these podcasts. I'll announce it here on brighttown.com. I'll announce it in articles and so on. And I can't wait for you to be able to play with this tool and see what it can do for you. So it's your support that helps us do this. We take your generosity, the resources that you've given us by being customers of ours at healthrangerstore.com. And we reinvest those resources into systems like this that can empower you and help you survive what's coming. So I put profits to work doing what our mission demands, which is the ongoing advancement and uplifting of human knowledge and human freedom. And food is a critical part of that, because if you don't have a food supply, you can't be free. If you don't have your own food, you know, you can't really be effective at helping freedom prevail, let's say. If you're starving to death, you're useless. So get on top of the food situation. It's early February 2024 in the Northern Hemisphere. Spring is beginning in some areas, just about to begin in others. So get your seed kits at healthrangerstore.com. Get your garden tools, get ready. And then get ready to download the Neo language model at the end of March, which will help you grow food and produce food and store food, all kinds of things. So thank you for your support. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com and brighteon.com.
Welcome to today's interview here on Brighteon. Now, this is under the category of strange events or unsolved mysteries. We're having a special guest, Timothy Alberino, who recently went on a journey to a very remote village in the Amazonian jungle to interview people who had firsthand accounts with what they claim are human type of beings that are trying to harvest their faces. They're called, face peelers? I think that's the term that they use. And is it folklore? Is it legend? Or is it really happening? Well, according to our guest today, he interviewed many local people who say it's really happening. And so it's a big mystery, especially in Peru and other South American countries, including Brazil, where this appears to be happening. So have an open mind. We're going to talk to Timothy Alberino and find out what he knows so far and see what you think about it. So again, unsolved mysteries or strange events on our world right here today on Brighteon with Timothy Alberino. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're joined by Timothy Alberino. His website is timothyalbarino.com. He's got a very popular YouTube channel. And he is an investigator, one of the sharpest investigators and authors that I've ever met. And he dares to go into realms of investigation that most people won't touch. And he's been traveling recently and has discovered some very disturbing things that he will be sharing with us today. Welcome, Timothy. Great to have you on the show again.
Great to be back with you, Mike.
Well, it's been too long, and you've done a lot since then. So where do you want to begin on your adventures?
Well, I wanted to tell you about a recent investigation I did in the Peruvian Amazon. I went on an expedition. I organized an expedition to a village called San Antonio de Pinto Yaku in the region of Alto Nanay in the Peruvian Amazon, not far from the city of Iquitos. And I don't know if you're aware, but there's been some very strange things going on in the jungle in the Peruvian Amazon as of late, actually going back to about mid-July, especially from mid-July to mid-August. Apparently, villagers in some of the villages out there in the Amazon have been assaulted by very strange beings with apparently advanced technology. And there were some videos that were captured from the village, this particular village, San Antonio de Pinto Yaku, back in mid-July, late July. They surfaced on social media and they instantly went viral. And
what kind of beings are you referring to? I mean,
well, I think we're probably talking about ultimately human beings, but I can't say for sure, and you'll understand why I'm saying that in this manner. As I get into the details, but I don't know if you saw the videos that were surfacing. There was a particular video that surfaced from San Antonio de Pinto Yaku, which depicted the villagers running around in a state of panic at nighttime, and they were discharging their firearms into the jungle. And in a subsequent interview with some of the villagers, some of the men of that village, they said that they were being assailed by tall beings who could float off the ground, about a meter off the ground, and who would fly through the air, and who apparently were impervious to their shotgun blasts. They shot them at point blank range to no effect. And this episode that happened, and it was multiple episodes over a few weeks, it was also breaking out in other villages in Alto Nanay in the Peruvian Amazon. So I decided at length to organize an expedition, and I chartered a riverboat, and I took Doug Thornton with me, who's an ex infantry marine and DHS guy, and I went into the village to investigate. It was a 2-day trip up the river. It's a very, very remote village. It's there's a communications outpost on this at this village that the provincial government established there, because after this village is a vast wilderness, just Amazon jungle for countless miles until you get to the border of Ecuador and Bolivia. So, I mean, rather Ecuador and Colombia. So it was a very remote location. And when Doug and I began to investigate, we were pretty shocked by what we found. And we can get into the details, and I'll pause here if there's any other questions you want me to answer before I get into the details of what exactly we encountered.
Well, I suppose the first question is, you know, many Central and South American cultures are quite rich with various stories of mysterious creatures such as the chupacabra, for example, and others. Did you find anything that convinces you that this is more than just folklore?
Well, this incident has to do with a particular legend in the jungle in the Amazon, both in the Peruvian and I'm finding out the Brazilian Amazon. And that legend is related to what they call pelacaras, which in English translates to face peelers. And I had heard about the pelacaras when I lived in this area of the jungle when I was 19 years old. So I'm very familiar with the area. I speak the local dialect with this, which is Spanish. It's actually called Charapa. It's a mix of Spanish and Quechua. And I heard about the face peelers.
Really? Quechua? I mean, that's the ancient language.
No, I speak I speak the charapa, which is a mix of Spanish and some Quechua mixed in.
Okay.
I don't speak Quechua, but I understand the Quechuan words that are used within the dialect of charapa, which is primarily Spanish.
Okay.
And it's actually, if you don't understand, if you can speak Spanish fluently and go into the jungle and really have a hard time understanding those people because they mix so much Quechuan into their Spanish. But that's where I learned Spanish, was among these communities out in the Amazon, that very region of the Amazon. So now it makes sense that, you know, I would go and do this investigation. And by the way, well, let me finish the face peeler legend before I add any more details. The face peeler legend goes back at least to, I would say, early to mid 80s. It does not go further than that. And we know that because I've talked to a lot of people out there in the jungle, and the elderly people will tell you that they did not grow up with this legend. This is something that began to develop in their time and in their children's time. So about, let's say, early to mid 80s. And the face peeler legend pertains to an unknown mysterious beings, let's call them, who from time to time will invade villages and will abduct certain individuals, and those individuals will later be found without their faces. Whoa. Their faces, either all of their face or part of their face, will be gone. Sometimes, I was told that in the early days of the phenomenon, actually those individuals, the victims, would be found with their organs missing. So their face would be surgically removed, and their organs would be missing. And so the villagers, the communities of the Amazon, they basically have two theories. I would actually say they have three theories that I've heard and that I heard when I was living there when I was 19. The first theory is that gringos are perpetrating. It's the gringos are perpetrating this phenomenon. They're the face peelers. It's an international group. They call it just, you know, gringos or any non-Latinos. And they are engaged in organ harvesting, and they've been doing this since the mid-80s, and they're in possession of technology, night vision technology. The face peelers can fly, by the way. This is always part of the legend. And so it's assumed by some that it's gringos with advanced technology. Others will tell you that the face peelers are not gringos. In fact, they're not even human. They're non-human entities, nefarious, obviously. And then there's some people will tell you that they believe that it's both, that there's humans and non-humans that are working together for some nefarious purpose. And we're talking about indigenous communities who are saying this and who have been saying this for decades.
But did you talk to local people who said that they had seen faceless bodies, victims of this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, in fact, there was a young man. I did a video on my YouTube channel about this. It got age restricted by Google after it hit a million views, got age restricted by Google recently, this past summer, in which I feature a young man from the same region of the jungle who was discovered without his face. 3/4 of his face are surgically removed. This is not the result of animal depredation. This is not piranhas. The man's face is very obviously surgically removed. So some sort of a very fine instrument was used to cut his face off. Now, I actually put that video in my video on YouTube, and so it got age restricted on Google, rather on YouTube. But yes, that incident happened around the same period of time this year in that same region of the jungle, the Alto Nanay, previous to my visit to San Antonio de Pintuyacu. And by the way, other things were happening during the same period of time when San Antonio was under assault by the alleged face peelers. There were very strange things happening in other parts of the Peruvian Amazon. There were all kinds of UFO sightings, and there were some hostile UFO encounters. One, there was a couple of young guys, I believe it was a couple of young guys in a village who were actually, I guess, attacked by a UFO that deployed some sort of a beam at them and was trying to lift them off the ground. There was a group of I believe they were college students who were in the jungle doing some sort of research, and they all witnessed a very strange non-human being walking through the jungle together. They all collectively witnessed this. So there was all kinds of UFO activity and high strangeness unfolding in the Peruvian Amazon prior to my visit to investigate this particular incident in San Antonio de Pintuyacu.
So, wow. I mean, you've touched upon a lot of possible explanations for this. And I think some of our viewers will be aware of, you know, cattle mutilations, for example, in many regions of the world. And those appear to involve organ harvesting with very precision type of procedures that remove organs.
That's right.
But what are the theories of why would they need people's faces? And I guess you're talking about just the skin, or are they removing eyeballs, teeth? I mean, what are we talking about here? And why? What are the theories of why? Who's collecting faces?
Well, as I said early on in the phenomenon, they were collecting more than faces. Apparently, they were organ harvesting. But recently, in more recent years, it's just been faces. And nobody knows why people are showing up without their faces. Like, they're finding dead bodies. You know, every now and again, they'll discover a dead body without the face. Now, it should be noted that in Mexico, the cartels do this as a campaign of terror, to strike terror in the hearts of their enemies. So they'll cut their victim's face off and, you know, wear it as a mask, or in some cases, one time they sewed it to a soccer ball and, you know, were kicking it around. And so the cartels engage in this sort of thing. And when I went to do this investigation with Doug Thornton, this was one of the possibilities that was in the back of our mind. In fact, it was one of the worst case scenarios. Are we dealing with heightened cartel activity in the Amazon? Are these cartels? So that's our first thought. The second thought was, are we dealing with something even worse than cartels, which would be an international organization of organ harvesters and or sex traffickers? That's like another level, maybe even using the cartels in this region. So these were, and then of course the third option is, are we dealing with some sort of a non-human phenomenon here? These were we weren't settled on any conclusion yet. We hadn't done the investigation. So when we got to San Antonio de Pintuyacu, again, I said it was a 2-day journey up the river, deep in the Amazon. I chartered a riverboat, and we actually supplied the village as well. We brought food and supplies to the village, medical supplies. So sort of a humanitarian thing as well. And I want to thank the guys from Conduit Church, Pastor Darren Tyler, Jamie Brandenburg, and the guys from Conduit Church who helped me to fund this expedition and really helped me fund the humanitarian part of it. And the reason why we did that, by the way, is because these villagers were no longer going into the jungle to harvest their food. They have what they call chakras out in the jungle, their little farms. They were so terrorized that they were no longer going out to harvest their yucca and so forth. They weren't going down the river to fish. They were staying in there close to their village, and the men were every night were going on patrol. Every single night, really? All the men would go on patrol with their shotguns. And so we brought them night vision goggles. We brought them thermal binoculars, radios, and high powered flashlights. And Doug actually ended up training them, how to walk in a military style patrol.
Well, so wait a minute. Anyway, some of those thermal vision devices, and I know, cause I have some of these, they have recording capabilities these days. Most of them do.
Yes.
Is it possible they've been trained on maybe getting recordings of future sightings, like thermal recording?
We train them with the night vision goggles. Now, you can't bring grade 1 or grade 2 night vision goggles out of the United States.
True.
You get arrested.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
But you can bring the I think they call them grade 3 or level 3 night vision goggles, which, and shout out to my friend Dave Salvaggio, who's probably going to hear this, who helped me to pick out the right gear to bring to these people so I don't get arrested when I come into the country.
Isn't that ITAR restrictions on exports?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think it's called Tier 3, actually. Tier 3 night vision goggles are like the kind of goggles that biologists use at night to look for animals and that sort of thing. Hunters will use them. They're actually pretty powerful. We had them with us in the jungle. We played around with them. And they do have recording capabilities. We did equip the villagers with those, and we did teach them how to use them.
But as of so far, they haven't, to your knowledge, captured any interesting footage? Or how would they even get you the footage? I mean, it's not like they have, you know, internet there, right?
They do have internet because they have a
satellite.
I mentioned that they had that satellite up. They had a communication outpost that was built by the provincial government in the village.
This
is one of the last villages on this vast expanse of Amazon jungle. And so, in fact, they do have satellite internet in this one building. So they have the capability. I mean, these guys, these villagers, and by the way, these are not primitive indigenous people running around in grass skirts with blowguns. They were right. That way maybe 50 years ago, but these are civilized people. They sit around, some of the men and women and children will sit around this government building, they call it the Tambo, at nighttime, and will sit there and watch movies. They're watching the Marvel movies. They're watching all the same movies we watch. They have social media accounts. So these are people who are very familiar with pop culture and have access to the internet. So they could capture something on these night vision goggles, download it onto a laptop, and upload it to the internet. And if they do capture something, they're going to send it to me first to evaluate it. So, but it must be understood that by the time we got to San Antonio de Pintuyacu, this was in the aftermath. This was everything had settled down for a couple months by the time we got there. The height of this activity was mid-July to the beginning of August. It was almost every night they were encountering what I'm about to explain. What these guys were encountering were very large individuals, assailants, who were dressed head to foot in black armored bodysuits. They were wearing helmets that were elongated in the back. They had large almond-shaped eye lenses that were described variously as green or yellow tinted. And they were impervious to at least to shotguns, 16-gauge shotguns. They were shot at point blank range many times to no effect. And they had the ability, according to some of the guys in the village, and I interviewed a lot of people in the village, according to some of these guys who encountered them, these assailants, who would only come at night, by the way, they would only make incursions into the village at nighttime. These men encountered them not walking, rather floating. And they say that the villagers explained to me, some of them, that these assailants have very large footwear. In fact, they leave imprints in the ground. They're very large. And their imprints are two discs, because on the bottom of their boots, assumedly boots, they have these discs that emit a light and allow them to float off the ground about a meter. Now, in addition to this technology that they're deploying from their footwear, from their boots, the way that they make the incursions into the village is through the air. They fly, but they're not using jetpacks, as some people have assumed or heard. Rather, they're flying on large circular discs, hoverboard platforms. And when they're on these discs, they just look like little flying saucers in the sky. And they don't make any noise unless they're lifting off the ground. When they lift off the ground from a stationary position, there's sort of a burst of maybe like compressed air. That's what it was described to me. Many people saw them flying on these discs. And when they're flying on the disc, it's almost as if they have stealth armor technology, because you can't see them unless you get up close and put a flashlight right on them. And then you'll see the silhouette of a guy sort of surfing on the disc. Now, you have to understand, I had dozens and dozens of people tell me about these guys, not just one or two. Okay. They were encountered by multiple people in the village. Men and women encountered them, these individuals. In fact, there was a young girl named Talia, 15 years old. They attempted to abduct Talia. And Talia's story, very briefly, she was in her backyard one evening just after dark. She was picking fruit out of a tree. Some fruit fell to the ground. She bent over to pick up this fruit, and she felt a gentle wind at her back, like a breeze suddenly at her back. And she saw the dead leaves rustling around her, and she wondered what it might be. She stood up and turned around, and to her shock, one of these assailants that I just described, dressed head to foot in black armored bodysuit, surfing on one of these circular hoverboards, flew up next to her, landed right next to her, grabbed her from behind, covered her mouth, and another one came up, landed in front of her, and grabbed her feet. And Talia, behind her house, there's sort of a forested gully. And there's jungle in there, and this is where these guys came from. And around this little gully are other houses of the other villagers. So this isn't on the outskirts of town. This is sort of in the middle of town. And long story short, They attempted to cut her face off. They took out what I think is a laser syringe, based on Talia's description of the device, and they began to make an incision in her neck, right here, right under her jawline. And she began to struggle as they're doing this. She was able to push up one of the helmets. She started to push it up on the guy that had her from behind. And as she was doing this, the guy in front of her slapped her in the face. And they sort of lost control of her for just a moment, and she screamed at the top of her lungs. And when she did this, the villagers, who were already in a heightened state of vigilance because this was not the first incursion into the village by these assailants, they came running immediately, including her brother, with their flashlights. And they saw these assailants. They saw them basically, you know, hovering on their boards and then maneuvering to where there was an opening in the trees, and then they shot up into the air. And one of them was tried to pull Talia with him. He was dragging her by her hair. And Talia says, and this is an anomaly, no one else told me this, Talia says that they spoke, and that one of the assailants, who she calls the gringo, who was the taller one, all of them are taller than me, by the way, and I'm 6 foot, he spoke broken Spanish, and the other one spoke Spanish, according to Talia, spoke with a normal Peruvian accent, and she heard them talking. In fact, before they started to cut her face under her jawline, they applied this cream. They were applying this cream to her face, which numbed her face immediately. And one of the assailants said to the other, "Be careful, don't put too much on. It's going to ruin the flesh." And Talia explained to me that what they were saying was that the cream was, if they put too much on, it would cause the skin to stick to the tissue as they were trying to cut her face off. So this was an incident that was very violent and physical, involving this 15-year-old girl that was witnessed by multiple villagers.
Yeah, this is pretty disturbing stuff, and it reminds me of, you know, it puts the lotion on its skin.
Exactly.
This is like, you know, the alien version of that movie. But what you're describing here sounds like, you know, non-terrestrial technology, but perhaps human beings have been given this tech and given a mission to go out and harvest faces for whatever reason. Maybe they chose this really remote village because they thought nobody would notice. I mean, what's your theory of what this is?
Well, that's actually my working hypothesis.
Really?
So we were able to rule out, and I'll tell you why in a moment. I think this will give some clarity. We were able to rule out the cartel thing and the, you know, just run-of-the-mill human traffickers right away. As soon as we began to encounter the technology, again, multiple witnesses in the village, multiple witnesses witnessing the same events in the village, and then other villages attesting to the same phenomena, okay? So apart from, by the way, they may be wearing these assailants, they may be wearing exoskeletons as well, because some of the men who pursued them, actually chased them into the jungle, said that they were, these are their words, inhumanly agile. And they said they could run way faster than a normal guy. And the way they moved, it was just very spooky and very, let's say, inhuman. Now, that could be because maybe we're dealing with something other than humans. That's a possibility. But also maybe we're dealing with humans in exoskeletons or something like some sort of technology. So apart from their body armor, apart from these discs that they fly around on, and apart from whatever the technology is that they're deploying from their footwear, they are also apparently in possession of what I can only describe as advanced aerospace vehicles. Again, these vehicles were seen by many villagers in different scenarios and on different nights. And basically what they look like are acorn-shaped craft, like an acorn on its side. So they come to sort of a point in the front, and then they get wider in the back. And one individual, and I had several, by the way, several villagers drew them in the dirt for me. And they all drew the same shape. And then one of the villagers drew it out on an acrylic board. And I should say that all of this is on film, and it's on my YouTube channel, for those of you who are curious. Expedition Report.
Wait, one second. One second, Timothy. I mean, this is... Let me interject something here, because I know you've probably been through this same museum, but there's a museum in Quito, Ecuador. And in that museum, I saw the carvings of the ancient Aztecs. And one of the carvings is the freaking space shuttle. I mean, it looks almost exactly like the space shuttle, but I forgot the date of that carving, but it was, you know, centuries, many centuries ago. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that, I don't know if you want to say extraterrestrials or somehow exotic technology has been used to visit many of these Amazonian cultures and regions throughout human history?
That's possible. I'm not sure that that's what we're dealing with here. I think that what we're dealing with in these incidences is closer to what you were suggesting earlier.
Okay, humans with exotic tech.
With exotic technology, where did they get it from? Are they possibly collaborating with a non-human faction here?
And like, we'll give you hoverboards if you give us faces.
And not just faces, by the way. You would be talking about lots of glands in the faces also, right? Not just, there's a lot of glands in there.
Yeah.
But these aerospace craft, one of the villagers, the one who drew it on the acrylic board, he described, he had a very close encounter. He was fishing, 3 o'clock in the morning, he was pulling up his nets. There's a little, what they call a cocha, a little creek. It's really part of the river, right there by their village. And so it's literally right adjacent to their village. And he was pulling up his nets at 3 a.m. Sometime in July. And suddenly he said it was like somebody turned the lights on, like the sun just came up and everything around him was illuminated. And he saw something bright flashing in the water. So he looks up and he sees one of these craft hovering above him, 30, 40 feet above him. And it has a light that's projecting down. And he said the really strange thing, and he described it the exact same way, this acorn-shaped craft. He said what was really strange was that it was transparent, as if it had some sort of a transparent mesh as the fuselage. He said it had little stubby wings. They weren't wings. It did not have wings. It had little stubby protrusions in the place of wings, and these protrusions would open up, so they would fold open and deploy a series of rapidly blinking lights as if it was scanning. And it made no sound. It hovered perfectly silently above him. He said when it began to move away, it made a low frequency humming sound. And he said there were no propellers, there were no engines, there was no propulsion system to speak of. And again, these guys are watching the same movies we do. I mean, they know what helicopters are. They see the military helicopters routinely flying around the jungle. These guys know what airplanes are. They see the prop planes flying over their villages all the time. I saw them when I was there, the little prop planes, the puddle jumpers. And they see the commercial airliners. They know what airplanes and helicopters are. And they all said to me, there were no propellers. There were no engines. And he saw two individuals, because again, it was transparent. He saw two people sitting inside of this thing. One was sort of up in the front, the cockpit area, presumably, and the other was sort of sitting in the middle.
So humanoid shaped, remember, passengers or pilots?
Yes. Yeah. I said, how did you know they were people? Well, he's looking directly up at it, right?
Uh-huh.
I said, how did you know they were people? He said, because I could see them sort of moving around in there. He said, I just assumed they were people sitting in there.
Huh.
He couldn't see any features of these people. He just saw two people sitting in the craft because it was transparent. I had a woman who got really close, even closer than him, to one of these craft at nighttime. It was hovering over her house during this period of time when these intruders were invading this village. She said she saw it probably just 20 feet in the air, and she described it. It wasn't transparent when she saw it. Same shape. She drew it in the dirt for me. It was solid, and it was like a blackish, grayish color, I think she told me, but the same exact description. So, and this is just two people. Multiple people saw these things. So now we have to add into this equation advanced aerospace vehicles. We have to.
Could this be like secret, you know, secret government projects, some secret branch of the DOD, and maybe they're trying to get material for, you know, cloning experiments or something like that?
It should be noted that this year, and I'm trying to remember the name. I can't remember the name of the project off the top of my head right now. There was a joint operation happening in Peru. It involved the United States and not just, you know, one branch of the military. It involved the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, Space Force was there. The United Kingdom was there in Peru, running some sort of a war game operation in conjunction with the Peruvian military, with the military of Uruguay, with the military of Brazil, I believe Colombia, Ecuador, and they were running operations partly in the Amazon jungle. And I wish I could remember the name. I'd tell you if I could remember the name of the operation. You can find it online. It's not some sort of a secret thing. And I postulated early on, could it be that elements of the United States government and these other militaries who are doing this joint operation, could it be that they are, under the cover of this operation, really going in to dislodge some other force that's operating in the Amazon? Could it be that they're going in to combat something? And that's why they're doing this, because they had battleships and stuff up the Amazon. And what? Or are they deploying technology? Are they testing some sort of technology out there using the cover of this operation?
You said they had ships on the Amazon. Are you saying U.S. naval vessels?
I believe there were U.S. I know that during the operation there were from the collective of these nations that were involved in the operation, they were running military Navy operations up and down the Amazon. It was land, sea, and air and river.
Okay. Okay.
And it really, I mean, Space Force is involved in this. So it just made me think, and I really wish I could tell you the name, because it's really, they have a really cool name for the operation as well. And my first thought was, do they know something that we don't, something going on in the Peruvian Amazon? Are they attempting to is this another sort of Operation High Jump where Admiral Byrd, you know, went on an exploration of the Antarctic, but in reality, he took with him battleship, submarine, and went to dislodge the remnants of the Nazis there. And what did they encounter? By the way, they encountered flying saucers. And is this something of, to that effect? Is this something of that nature? Is this a covert operation to go combat something that's some sort of a force, an enemy force, perhaps even an exotic force, operating in the Amazon, and do so under the cover of this joint operation? I don't know, but it's a very interesting coincidence.
So what do you think is the most compelling evidence that you've seen so far? Because, you know, look, to a lot of our viewers, you know, it sounds unbelievable, obviously. Or maybe to some of them, it sounds very feasible, you know, because there are secret weapons programs and who knows what they're doing with, you know, genetic harvesting and engineering. And well, I mean, we know China's working on genetically engineered super soldiers, for example. That's not a secret. But to a lot of our audience, they're going to be really skeptical. What do you think is the best evidence? Is it the firsthand accounts of the villagers?
It's the preponderance of the eyewitness testimonies, not just from San Antonio de Pintuyacu, but from multiple villages. Okay. There's a village, not a village, there's a jungle city that's the only place you can get to by road from Iquitos. It's called Nauta. Nauta has the inhabitants of San Antonio de Pintuyacu, that little village, that's about 200, the population, 200 people. The population of Nauta is 36,000. Okay, so now you're dealing with a much larger community. And Nauta has a military base. They have helicopters. There's a large police presence. There's automatic weapons. So it's no longer just, we're not talking about just a defenseless, you know, remote village out in the Amazon. And this same phenomenon happened in Nauta. I know that because I went to Nauta after my investigation in San Antonio, went back down the river, went to Nauta. And I investigated a particular video I wanted to look at, which is very intriguing. We don't have to get into it now, but it's in that video I published on my website, rather on my YouTube channel, The Expedition Report. And I wanted to go see this particular location during the day. The video was shot at night. And I found out while I was in Nauta that they had been doing patrols just like this village, but on a larger scale in Nauta. And they were encountering the same guys dressed in black armored bodysuits, surfing around on these hoverboards, these circular hoverboards, same guys. In fact, not far from Nauta, in a village, I believe the village is called Bacasan, there was a young boy previous to my visit, and this happened maybe a couple weeks before I got there, there was a young boy who was rushed to the hospital from one of these villages, rushed to the hospital in Nauta because he had been attacked by an alleged face peeler, and he had very deep lacerations, four of them on both sides of his necks, two on each side of his neck here, under his jawline, just like Talia. But these were very deep, gruesome lacerations. I posted the video on Twitter, the unblurred video where you can actually see the boy there. Just he was sitting there in the hospital, sort of in a state of shock with these just very gruesome, deep lacerations to his neck. Thank God they were able to save his life. They gave him blood and sewed him up, and they were able to save his life. And the boy's testimony is that at night he was attacked by these very same assailants, or at least dressed the same, apparently with the same technology. But so we're not talking about something that's just sort of lights in the sky. These people are being assaulted. I talked to another person.
Well, wait, hold on a second.
I talked to another person.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but go ahead. From what you're saying here, they're trying to harvest these people's faces while they are living.
While they're alive.
I mean, what does that indicate? What kind of a harvesting project would require a living person's face, as opposed to, you know, it would be easier for them, obviously, to just kill the person and then take their face. Why would they need their faces while they're alive?
Well, there's two possibilities here in my mind. One is, are we dealing with some sort of a terror, adrenochrome type thing, where they have to induce terror in the victim before they harvest, let's say, a certain gland? I don't know. That's just speculation. It's out there. Or is the whole face peeler thing, are we dealing with a group of nefarious human beings in possession of advanced exotic technology who are using the face peeler phenomenon, the legend of the face peelers, as cover for something else that's going on in the Amazon? In other words, they can't completely mask their presence in the Amazon, so they want people to think that they're these face peelers, and that's why they apparently aren't very good at their jobs. That's why they attempt to abduct Talia but get caught. Then they attempt to abduct this or cut this kid's face off from Bagazan. They get caught. Who knows how many people they've actually taken, though? I don't know. Right. So it could be one of those two things. Either they need to induce the terror right there on scene while they harvest the face, because obviously they're probably not just harvesting the skin. Again, I would say they're probably harvesting something else as well. Under the skin, there's lots of, as I said earlier, there's lots of glands in the face. So are we dealing with some sort of a terrorizing adrenochrome thing, or are we dealing with a legend that's being used and as a cover for something else? So they want it to look like they're after faces, when in reality, that's not what they're doing. It's just a cover.
But, you know, I mean, you've trekked through jungles many times, obviously. I've trekked through jungles. Like, a hoverboard sounds like the worst possible way to move through a jungle. I mean, I can't. How would you even do it? You need your feet on the. You need traction. There's a lot of stuff in the way. You know what I mean?
That's right. Now, before I answer that question, it should be noted that we were the first non-governmental investigators to go to the village. I didn't think we were. We were the first, and before us, the provincial government deployed two police officers who had a Navy escort who went to the village of San Antonio Pintuyacu, and they conducted a piss poor investigation, and they interviewed Talia, and they determined, and this became the accepted story. This became the narrative on the media, both Peruvian and American media. They determined that the village was being assaulted by river miners with jetpacks, and that the river miners were being funded by the cartels. That was their story. Now, when I asked the
river miners with jetpacks,
and when I asked the villagers about that, they were literally offended. They were very upset. As soon as I said that, they shook their heads. I said, "That's ridiculous. Those police officers didn't do anything. They concocted that story. It was a complete fabrication because they couldn't explain what was going on in the village." And they did not want to stay and do an investigation. So they concocted this ridiculous narrative. And we know for a fact that it's not river miners with state-of-the-art jetpacks. We know for several reasons. But That my first thought was, how are you going to maneuver around the jungle on a with a large jetpack?
Yeah,
that was my first thought, and obviously that holds true. Now I had the same thought that you just brought up about these hoverboards. So let me explain this, because people are going to right now, they're going to go on Google and type in hoverboard, and they're going to get these state of the art hoverboards that use propeller technology like drones. And that are really remarkable. You can go really fast on them, go really high. They're super loud.
Right, exactly.
Really, really loud, and they have a really short battery life. These things are silent. These are silent, and they are exceedingly dexterous on them. These guys are moving between the trees. Now, what they're usually doing, though, is they're flying over the village, and the villagers see them like little flying saucers. They have a series of colored lights around them, around the perimeter, and they also have floodlights on them. And they'll go land in between the trees. So they'll descend between the openings in the trees.
I see.
Or in the clearing. And then they disembark, usually. They disembark from these circular hoverboards, and they walk, or as I said before, according to some villagers, float into the village. And then when they're chased, they go back to these hoverboards and presumably snap back into them, maybe some sort of magnetic thing on their boots, and then they take off at high rates of speed. That's what we're talking about here. No sound, just a little burst of air when they initially take off the ground. That's it. Otherwise, they're silent. And so we're not dealing with conventional technology here. And you have to always add into the equation those advanced aerospace, acorn-shaped craft.
What you're describing, I got to bring this up. Show my screen, guys. In Marvel comic lore, Green Goblin has this hoverboard. There he is. The Green Goblin in body armor has the hoverboard. Well, of course, this one has a jet engine on it, and it's kind of loud. But, this is kind of what you're describing.
It's very apropos that you bring that up. That is exactly the way they described it.
Really?
That was the first thing they said. The first thing they said on that video that went viral in regard to what these guys look like, they said they look like the Green Goblin.
You're kidding
me. They're flying on these boards, and they have body armor, and they have elongated helmets, except they're not green. One guy said, most of them said they're black. They have black like stealth body armor. One guy that I talked to who shot one point blank, like 5 feet, he shot this thing. And this guy pulled me aside, and he really wanted me to know what he shot. And he described it. He said, they're all telling you that these guys were black. Okay, that's what they saw. What I saw, this guy was dressed in a silver armored bodysuit, head to foot. He was floating off the ground. I said, was he on a hoverboard? Was he on one of these circular discs? He said, no. He was floating off of his boots. On the bottom of his boots, it was like a light coming out.
That's Iron Man.
And he said, yeah, exactly. He got a good look at it. He described the helmet, everything. And he said, I shot him. Point blank range, I shot him, 16 gauge. And it knocked the assailant back on his butt. But then he just popped back up in the air and started floating again. So the force of the shotgun blast knocked him on his butt, but it didn't hurt him. He just popped back up and then like flew away. And the guy said, I chased him. By the way, I talked to a guy named Pablo in the city near the city of Yurimaguas, which is southwest of where these incidents happen, still in the Amazon, still in the Peruvian Amazon, in the general region of the Amazon, but further southwest in a city, Yurimaguas, which I'm very familiar with. I talked to him. His little tiny village, it's not even a village, it's like a homestead. It's like a homestead collective with a couple of families there. They encountered the same guys. Now, what's really interesting about this story is Pablo, he was bathing in the river. And he said, suddenly he heard people screaming, face peelers, face peelers. And of course, it's the sun had just gone down and he's coming out of the river. He grabbed a towel, threw a towel around his waist, ran into his house, grabbed his gun and his flashlight. And he started to pursue these face peeler guys. He's chasing them into the jungle. He discharges his shotgun at one of them, and he hears it dinking off the guy's body armor. He hit him. He hears it dinking off.
Uh-huh.
Now, it didn't hurt the guy, but apparently the shotgun blast messed with the propulsion system that was built into the guy's suit or boots. They were not on discs, and this they were, so it's like the boots. They're propelling off the ground in the boots, and he was able. He actually sprinted towards this guy as he's attempting to lift off into the air, and he tackled him, grabbed him around the waist. So Pablo's holding one of these assailants around the waist as he's lifting off into the air, and suddenly the guy pulls out this. What Pablo describes as a little laser, and he hits him with the laser, and Pablo goes unconscious, instantly unconscious. And he wakes up his dad and I think his brother found him, and they're waking him up, and he's had heart trouble since then. So whatever they hit him with, some sort of
like super advanced device, taser type of thing,
something like that, it instantly knocked him out. I tell that story to highlight how physical this is. This isn't lights in the sky. This is right.
And I don't want to discount these firsthand testimonials from these people, but you know, again, someone watching this is going to say, "Well, these people, they've been watching too many Spider-Man movies, and now they're kind of like they're making it real, or maybe they're smoking something from the jungle." You know, I mean, is it possible that this is a shared delusion, or something that they made real because it got them attention? I mean, it got them medical supplies. You brought them medical supplies, you know? I mean, I'm just
in the absence of the physical encounters, I would say yes. But because of the physical encounters, Talia, the boy with the deep lacerations, Pablo, who tackled one of these guys, all the guys who shot them point blank range, who talked to me, and all the other villages that were experiencing the same phenomenon, one of my thoughts was, is this psychosis going into this? Is this like some sort of a mass psychosis? And I think the logical answer is no, it's not, because of the physical encounters and because of the ubiquitous descriptions of the assailants. And it's still going on. I just saw a report yesterday that villagers in Brazil recently are encountering the exact same guys.
Really?
So whoever this is, they're deploying advanced technology for very nefarious purposes. And I think what you said is my hypothesis. I think that we're dealing with nefarious human beings who are harvesting something from these people, or are using the phenomenon to cover something else up. Uh-huh. One, you know, the face peeler phenomenon to cover something else up. And they're clearly in possession of advanced technology. Now, cartels do have military-grade technology. There's no question about it. The Mexican cartels have it. They have the automatic weapons, but they don't have tanks. They don't have, you know, Black Hawk helicopters. They don't have fighter jets. They don't have battleships.
This is way beyond that, yeah.
This is way beyond cartel activity. This is something, is there a higher echelon? Are we talking about some sort of a nightmarish organization of individuals? Richard Dolan, my friend, the ufologist Richard Dolan, he calls it a breakaway civilization. Are we dealing with some sort of a breakaway civilization of nefarious human beings who are deploying exotic technology for exceedingly nefarious purposes?
Well, there's the question of the day.
I think that is probably what's happening here, at least in my estimation. And that to me is terrifying.
Okay. So if there's a breakaway civilization, And I think that's a viable line of thinking here, because there are many other examples of exotic tech that people have witnessed in various ways. And there are also control systems, like control grids over humanity. Some people suspect 5G might be part of that, you know, what have you, chemtrails, things like that. But do you get any sense at all of what would be the end goal of this breakaway civilization, or is this going to get bigger? You mentioned Brazil already. Is there any indication this is going to spread to other Central and South American countries, or maybe other continents?
Well, the phenomenon right now is limited to the Peruvian Amazon and many other parts, by the way, that we haven't discussed. So the phenomenon so far, the Peruvian and Brazilian Amazon, rather, to the Amazon jungle, let's say, generally speaking. My feeling is that maybe there's a base out there. Maybe there's some sort of a you know, could it be a military base? Could it be a base of this? I don't even know what to call this organization. They're not a cartel. And even the term globalist doesn't really have the kind of explanatory power that I'm looking for here. Right. This is some sort of a group that, if it's human, assuming it's human, and I do.
Let's call it Spectre.
It's some sort of a Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly like what I was going to say. Yeah. It's like this, like supervillains, basically.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, then I guess we're just going to have to wait and see, number one, if any of the contacts that your team had there is able to start getting some kind of thermal footage or video footage. I mean, that would be a game changer. You know, there was that event that happened in Miami at that mall a few weeks back where there were like 100 police cars that came in. I think it was in, it was in Miami.
And in some Miami, people that's right.
said there was like an ultra tall being walking around, but nobody had any footage of it. So that just became, you know, a rumor. But if somebody gets footage of one of these, you know, hoverboard evil Iron Man characters or whatever, I mean, then that's a game changer right there.
Yeah. And so the Peruvian press they took this story very seriously back in July and August. They were covering it very, very seriously. I was actually surprised. And then as soon as those police officers concocted that ridiculous jetpack minor narrative, that's what the press ran with. That was it. Oh, it's just miners with jetpacks all along. Okay.
That's crazier than
Everybody
thinking it's aliens.
Down. And you know what's interesting is even News Nation, who was covering this story, even they ran with the jetpack miner narrative, the concoction.
I've met miners. None of them have jetpacks. Okay. They are poor. They are impoverished. Now they're humble people. They do not have jetpacks.
And the contention was, well, they're trying to drive these villagers off of their land so that they can harvest gold in the river. Well, what about Nauta? Okay. What about Nauta? 36,000 inhabitants, automatic weapons, military base. They're not driving anybody out of Nauta.
Right.
To harvest gold. That's not the explanation.
Right. And
I should say that in Nauta, some of the people I was interviewing saw not only did they attest to the encounters with these guys wearing black armored body suits on the discs. They told me that they actually saw hovering above, and in fact, I went there to chase down this particular video, the location of this particular video, which I found. The neighbor who lived across the street said that she saw a flying saucer hovering there, a saucer craft, your typical flying saucer hovering above the tree, and her and all her neighbors. So it just gets weirder and weirder. So what sort of makes me wonder, are we dealing with some sort of a human non-human collaboration? As crazy as that sounds, it is exotic technology. It's not conventional technology.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the last questions here. We're almost out of time, but even when I was living in Ecuador, and of course I wasn't way out in the jungle, but I was in rural Ecuador, everybody had a mobile phone. But they had cell towers. As you know, in a lot of these South American nations, cell towers are the only form of telecom, right? And they've been built up in many areas. Now, it sounds like where you went, they didn't have cell towers at all. But at some point, won't enough people have mobile phones that somebody's got a camera running?
Yeah. And well, keep in mind that these guys are coming at night. So it's very difficult to get anything but lights at nighttime on a cell phone.
Yeah, good point.
But The reason why I was talking about the Peruvian press is because the Peruvian press has been caught a couple months back. They were caught publishing a fake image of a guy up in the sky with some sort of like a jetpack, like standing on like exactly what I was talking about, the circular platform, but it was fake and it was daytime image. And we know it's fake because when you take it in Photoshop, the guy has all kinds of pixelation around him, and only that guy. So he was obviously pasted in from some other photo.
Uh-huh.
So they ran with that. So they I don't know if they knowingly did it, but they were publishing fake images of these, you know, face peelers, and they were saying, "Aha, see, it's just miners with technology."
That's still wild.
It is still wild. Since my investigation, actually, there's been a series of fake videos and images that have been popping up, and nobody is really seriously challenging any of this. But I think this is one of the most, the most mind-bending mysteries of the last decade, at least, what's unfolding in the Amazon. It's still going on in Brazil right now.
Uh-huh.
And the villagers are terrified. They're all in both in Peru and Brazil demanding the government to intervene and to do something, the Navy, to deploy the Navy or something and do something. So they're not, it's not a joke. If you go, you know, if you travel to Iquitos right now and you start talking to people about face peelers, it's not a joke. The people are very much aware of what's going on in the Amazon.
What's the face peeler term in Espanol again?
Pelacara.
Pelacara.
Yeah, they also call them pistaco. That's an older term, but they're called pelacara. Okay. Face peeler.
Wow. Well, that's a horrifying phrase, sure to drive fear into the hearts of many villagers. All right. Well, how about this? Keep us posted. If you get any images or any video or anything like that, I know you'll post it on your YouTube channel. That's also your name, Timothy Alberino. But would you come back and share that with us as well?
Yes, I will. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, I would say, look, we have an open mind about this. I mean, it sounds pretty fantastical, but there's a lot of weird stuff going on our planet right now. That's for sure. And if any more evidence comes out of this, we'd like to see it.
So, absolutely. And people who are curious can go watch the video on my YouTube channel. You'll see everything I'm talking about, the interviews with the people, what the village looks like. You know, the whole thing is on my YouTube channel.
Okay. All right. Well, very cool. All right. And also, let me remind our viewers that your website is timothyalberino.com. And that's where they can stay in touch. And you've got some really amazing books as well. I want to plug that. You've got some good work out there. Well, thank you, Timothy. Fascinating conversation. You're going to make some people not sleep well this evening, but thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me on, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you. And take care, Timothy.
All right, brother. See you.
All right. See you. So folks, there you go. Timothy Alberino, fascinating account. And, you know, Timothy actually went there. I mean, he and Doug did the trip. They went there. They did the interviews. This is not just a guy talking about stuff that somebody else was talking about. He went there and did this. So, you know, take that for some weight. And then check out his website, check out his videos, and see what develops in this story. And, of course, we'll keep in touch with Timothy and continue to cover this if more evidence emerges. Maybe somebody will capture like a hoverboard. And then they could have like villagers on hoverboards. That would be cool to get your hands on this technology, right? Find out what it is. In any case, regardless of what you think about what's happening in the world, we do live in a very strange universe, more strange than what we've been told, no doubt. So do with this what you will. And thank you for watching today. Thank you for your interest. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care. We've got Tina from the Satellite Phone Store in studio with us today here in Texas. Welcome, Tina. Great to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you too, Mike. And thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay.
Well, people love you and your company and what you offer. And it's been life-saving. There was a case in the fires on Maui where someone used your satellite phone product to reach, I don't know, make 1,000 calls, or what was the deal with that?
Yeah, so one of our customers had a phone and no one else around him had a satellite phone. So he was able to help and direct approximately 14,000 people with just one satellite phone. So
wow.
It's amazing. And this is the reason why you got to have one of these, because this happened here in the United States of America,
yeah.
Where, you know, as you know, 5% of the island was on fires, but 95% of the island had no cell service.
It could happen so fast.
It could happen anywhere. I mean, here with the weather, fires, tornadoes, hurricanes, anything or, you know, government shutdown or just about anything, you need to have a satellite phone because that will work.
Now, in fact, let me give out your website, sat123.com, and we really appreciate your support of this network and this platform. I think I'm mentioning your company all the time because you have such great solutions. One of those is this. This is called the Bivy Stick. This is a two-way satellite text messaging device. I actually show the close-up. There it is on the right-hand side there. That's the Bivy Stick. Two-way satellite text messaging from anywhere on the planet, and you offer these with a service plan.
Right. So you could just use your smartphone. You can put your phone on like airplane mode if you're in the middle of nowhere and you need coverage. As you know, my cell phones work on 7% of the earth. This will work from 100% of the earth. It doesn't matter where you are on the planet. You'll be able to pull out your smartphone and you'll be able to send and receive text messages from anyone on earth.
That's
amazing. You just put your phone on airplane mode and start texting. So if you're a boat, if you have a boat, or if you're a hiker, camper, or just want to have one for emergencies.
Or a soldier. I mean, you know, you've supplied these to some of the folks that are helping to protect the border in Texas.
That's right. Yeah.
And they use these every day.
Yeah. Michael Yon uses this.
Yeah. When he goes down to Panama, he's using it.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. Yep. By the way, thank you for your donations to the groups that are really working to help protect America.
Yeah,
I mean, your company has made a huge difference. One of the guys that I know who operates in Texas, you know, I had him in studio in shadow. We couldn't show his face, but he said that your equipment, your satellite phones and the bivy sticks worked better than what the government gave them to use.
Yeah. I mean, this product it works again from anywhere on earth, and you don't even have to stand outside because you can walk away within 10 feet. So you can put that by a window.
Yes.
Or on the outside, and then, you know, so if there's a bad storm or, you know, if something is happening, you can still use and send out text messages to friends and family inside. You just need to be within 10 feet away.
I've done that myself. I don't travel without this. In fact, this one's from my car. I always carry it with me. Now, you've got, I understand, some specials to share with our audience, short-term discounts.
I do. And I also want to mention that this, you also get Galileo is private messaging from the influencers. Like Mike, you sent messages through the bivy sticks to the followers that you have on Galileo.
Like emergency messages,
emergency messages. So those are really nice to have too.
As Steve Quayle sends and
Steve Quayle,
Doug Hagman and so on.
Yeah. There's I think about 40 influencers that send messages. So
and let me just add. You know, I haven't sent a lot of messages, but as things deteriorate in society, I'll be using that more and more, especially as systems start to break down out there, like electricity or food distribution or banking or whatever. I'm going to be hammering people with intel messages that they can receive on this.
Right. And that's $65.99 a month, and that includes unlimited texting, so you can send and receive unlimited texting, and it also includes the private messaging that you get from the influencers as well.
Perfect. Okay.
And those are uncensored.
And what about the phones? You have the Inmarsat and the Iridium. Are both of those available right now?
They are. So all of the three products that you see are going to be free. The iSat is $85.99 a month. Now the iSat works on about 90% of the earth. It will not work on the poles, the South Pole.
Okay, that's
or the
one
pole.
In the center there.
That's the one in the center, But it will work in the whole earth except for the poles. So if you're not going to go to Antarctica or, you know, down far south, then that will work for you. Where the Iridium is 100% global coverage.
So that's the one that Santa Claus uses then?
That's the one that Santa Claus uses,
Is he in the North Pole or the South Pole? I forget.
Yeah, I forget.
I think he's in the North Pole.
Yeah, or both.
Okay.
During the summer.
So Santa's elves are using the Iridium phone also to communicate with the boss.
Right. Right. So the bivy stick uses Iridium network. So you've got 66 satellites that uses. They're low orbit satellites. So that's how they're able to cover the whole globe.
Yes.
So the Iridium phone, the one that's standing, uses the Iridium network. And then the Inmarsat, they have three geostationary satellites, and they're right around the equator. So that's the reason why if you go far into the poles away from the equator, you will not get reception.
I see.
But everywhere else on Earth, it will cover.
Okay, that's great. And what do you have? What's the cost of the Iridium?
So the cost of the Iridium, they're about $1,300. We are giving them away for free. You do need to sign up for $95.95 a month. And it's 24-month agreement, and then you own the Iridium phone. After the 24 months are up, then you just month to month. And you can also change your plan if you choose to.
And the minutes roll over, right?
The minutes roll over, yeah.
So you can save them up for the next emergency or whatever happens.
Yeah. And I think that's what happened with the fellow that was in Hawaii.
Yeah.
He had a boatload of minutes. And so his bill was still the same using all those minutes. And it wasn't just him. We noticed that there were thousands and thousands of minutes being used during the fires in Hawaii from all of our customers that did have the satellite phone. And we did receive a lot of emails that that was a lifesaver during the time that they needed it most. Some people said they've had it for 7 years and they've never used it. And that one time it was worth the effort. Right. Yeah. Because it was a lifesaver. They were able to call and locate their families and connect with their families when the kids were at school and the moms were at work and they found ways and they had the satellite communication where they can go and, you know, find their kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes it worthwhile. Okay. So the website is SAT123.com. That's the satellite phone store. And given sort of where things are headed right now, there's a lot of talk about, you know, secession or civil war or world war, things like that. A lot of people are fleeing different areas of the world right now. For example, I mean, many Israelis have left Israel because of what's happening there. A lot of them in northern Israel had to leave by order of the government, for example. Many people in America are leaving, you know, violent cities because of the uncontrolled crime and the defunding of police and so on. We have the open border situation. You know, there's chaos in Europe, there's protests, farmers protesting. I mean, people need to be able to stay in touch, even on the road, even when mobile. And I don't remember a time in my life when the situation was as chaotic as we're seeing right now. What are your thoughts?
Right, yeah, and I agree with you. You know, when you have a satellite phone, a lot of people say, well, who am I going to call? If I have a satellite phone and my loved one doesn't have a satellite phone or kids, you know, or family, well, so far what we've seen, Mike, in emergencies, like with hurricanes and everything, you can call any cell phone.
Yes.
So, but if the whole world's grid went down, you both people or, you know, friends
right.
and family. Yeah.
But normally people are using a satellite phone to call somebody else on a regular mobile phone
right.
in some other area.
Right.
Where the cell towers are working.
Right, right.
Or a landline.
Yeah.
They can call a landline.
Yeah. And the other, I think there's a movie out right now, the other question that's coming up a lot, where they went to use a satellite phone and it didn't work. I think it's on, have you heard of the movie? It's The End of the World. I haven't seen it, but we are getting a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah, that new Netflix movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
movie.
So all I want to say is that the last thing on Earth that would ever go down in communication, it is going to be the satellite phones. You literally would have to take down the satellites to have the satellites not work, and that would be the last thing, I think, in communication that would actually go down. So these are
the U.S. government uses the networks. The senators, the Pentagon uses the Iridium network. I mean, I would argue largely it's up there for military use.
Right.
And then the
right.
civilian use is kind of a afterthought.
Yeah. Yeah. it was pretty much created for the military, right?
Yeah.
Iridium was bought out so that they can keep the military communications going by Iridium years ago. And that's initially that's what it was. But recently, you know, it has become available for an average, you know, consumer like me. I want to satellite phone to have with me because you never know. And I want my son and, you know, my husband, we all have my sisters. We all have a satellite communication. If something happened, we want to be able to communicate with each other to make sure that we're all okay.
Absolutely.
We also have, we have communication drill twice a year on the 1st of January and on June 1st. We all get together and everybody
smart.
Takes out their satellite equipments and we all call each other. To make sure that everybody knows how to use their communication. Because the last thing you need, like if the grid went down and you're like, oh, how do I call my wife or what's my wife's number or, you know, husband or whatever. So we do encourage everyone, if you and your family have satellite communication, to make sure that everybody knows how to use them.
That's a really good point because there are also different ways to dial, like to dial a satellite phone. You enter a different prefix versus dialing somebody's cell phone. And you need to know country codes if you're calling, obviously, somebody in another country.
Right.
But what I love what you've done with the satellite phone store, you really innovated making it affordable. Because a lot of people can't shell out like $1,300 up front and then service fees on top of that. But you made it to where it's just one monthly fee that's under $100. You eventually own the phone itself as you fulfill the number of months required. And then, but you get minutes every month too, and the minutes roll over and you can save them up. I mean, nobody else that I know of did that.
Yeah.
I mean, you really revolutionized the satellite phone industry.
Yeah. Yeah, no one else does that. Everywhere else, if you want to go and get that Iridium phone, it's going to be approximately $1,500 with tax and everything. And then plus,
wow,
you have to pay another $1,000 for the service for 1 year, where, you know, we've made it simple for the Inmarsat phone, which is pretty much 90% of the people can go with the Inmarsat phone if you don't live in the poles. That's only $85 a month.
Yeah.
And that's only a 15-month agreement, because that's kind of like where the break-even point for us is. So we're kind of like trying to set it up so that we don't also lose money.
Right.
But that's the break-even point. But majority of the people, once they get one, they don't want to be without one anymore. So our customers tend to stay with the service for many, many years. So.
Well, that's great. I hear a lot of positive feedback from our audience that it helps them feel safer when they're traveling. You know, people take it with them in their carry-on baggage on airplanes in case there's a problem somewhere, especially traveling. You know, you don't have family nearby, you don't have a house or whatever. You need emergency comms. People take them on hikes. We already mentioned the soldiers, even like border patrol people and so on. So there are 1,000 uses for it. And like I said, I won't travel without them.
Yeah.
Both a bivy stick and a sat phone in my vehicle.
Yeah. Recently, some of our travelers went to Acapulco, and they took the phone, the satellite phone, with them, and they're like, "Yeah, I take it with me everywhere, and I never use it." And man, did they ever need that! They got hit with they went to bed. It was a tropical storm. The next morning, it was
Cat five.
Yeah, and all cell towers, everything was down, and they were able to use the satellite phone to get help and to try to get out of there. So that was, we got a lot of stories. We got a lot of our customers, you know, emailing us and telling us that, So you never know.
That's the thing. The situation can change dramatically, very rapidly. And I would say to our audience, I think one of the big risks right now is the civil unrest following infrastructure collapse, which could include banking infrastructure. You know, if the banks shut down, or if the SNAP, you know, food stamp cards stop working for 72 hours, you know, what's the average American city going to look like? It's going to be chaos, and you know, it's going to be a very difficult situation. You don't want to be near that, and you want to have backup comms.
Yeah, we do get a lot of questions on that. Also, I'm glad you brought that up, Mike. People tell us, well, you know, what if the banking system did go down? How am I going to pay my bill? Are you going to turn me off? The answer is no, we're not going to turn anyone off. If the banking system or if the grid went down, we're going to, you know, wait it out. If things come back to normal 3 or 4 months later, we'll settle the bill at that time. But we're not going to turn people off if the grid did go down.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, that is a question that people ask me too. So you got that, folks? Even if the banks go down and all the credit cards stop working, the satellite phone store is not going to disconnect your service.
No.
So
no, we're not going to do that.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
All right.
We got to have a business when things come back.
Well,
so we're not going to.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned 3 to 4 months. I mean, that's an interesting guess. You know, I interview a lot of people, and some people think the outage that's coming might only be 2 weeks, and other people think it's 2 years. You know?
If it's 2 years, it's 2 years. We wait it out. And if when things get back to normal, we'll settle the bill at that point.
Can you imagine a two-year comms outage?
Yeah. I mean, that would be insane,
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Especially for the youth in America. I don't think they can handle a two-minute outage of Wi-Fi.
No, yeah.
It's not working.
Yeah. Yeah, my son lost his phone, and he didn't call me. And I'm like, why didn't you call me? He's like, well, how am I going to get your number? I lost my phone. I'm like, really?
Why, you don't remember people's numbers.
Nothing. Yeah. They've.
Hey, Rhody, how you doing? Rhody likes to say hello.
Hi, Rhody.
Yeah. How you doing, Ro? What you up to, yeah? This is also an emergency infrastructure augmentation being here. Like, when the cell towers go down, I'm pretty sure he will still be active as well.
Yep. Yeah, he can manage.
Yeah,
I think he'll be just fine. Yeah.
Yeah, how you doing?
He'll actually be happy. He'll get more attention.
Hey, have you seen the bivy sticks? What do you think?
Mm.
Okay, they passed the sniff test.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Whoa. All right. Good job, Rhody. Hold on. Well, thank you, Tina. Sorry about
that. That's okay.
He gets crazy around this time. He's like, it's time to go play.
Yeah.
But thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing things. Thank you for what you do and for helping so many of our customers. Yeah,
thank you so much for having me. I also want to mention that we are going to keep these prices up for 1 week.
These are
a little bit more discounted than normal. Yeah, so they're about 10 to 15% less than what we normally put them out there for. So we are going to leave them up there for 1 week.
All right, then, depending, because we may run this from time to time for a few weeks. So I'll just tell the audience, check the prices at sat123.com.
Yeah, yeah.
But
please
move quickly if you want to get the specials.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll leave them for 1 week after this goes on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you, Tina.
Yeah, thank you so much. And
all right.
Thanks so much for having me. Beautiful
Absolutely.
Studio.
Oh, yeah. We love it here.
Yeah.
We appreciate you coming by. So thank all of you for supporting our sponsors, such as the Satellite Phone Store, and for supporting this platform, Brighteon.com. Rhodey's going to drag me out of here in just a minute. It's ring time, as you can see. Here he is. Look at that. Okay, it's time to go. So thank you for watching today, and take care, everybody. Be well. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you so much.
Good boy, Ro. Good boy.
All right.
Yes. Yeah.